Hello, listeners, and welcome back once again to Underwood and Flinch. Here, we call this Season 4, Episode 12. But over at Patreon, we call it Underwood and Flinch Underground, Episode 25. 25 of 60, no less. But I won't bore you with all that Patreon guff again. I know you want to get on with the story, and so I'll just shut my pie hole and hand over to me for my original 2017 episode recap. Here I come. I'm sure that you can all remember vividly that our starring character was Damo, who woke up in Rose's bed and had a wild and crazy impulse to go off to Underwood's house. Now, as you know, Damo is unaware of what has happened to Underwood, and he believes that because Underwood's belongings are all moving to his house in Bloomsbury Square, so, most probably, is Underwood. We left Damo last time as he came out of the basement entrance to Rose's subterranean apartment on Surrey Street, and in the interest of a smooth continuity between last episode and this one, I will play you that last scene again before we slide into the conclusion of this chapter in Underwood and Flinch, Underground. The evening was cool, and though the smell from the basement bin cupboard opposite Rose's front door was less than fragrant, he was once again out in the fresh air. He drew in a deep breath, imagining it blowing away the dust and mould that must have settled in his lungs since his descent into Rose's lair. Then he trotted up the steps and out onto the street. To his right, at the bottom of the street, was the river. To his left, at the top, was the Strand. If he remembered rightly, Bloomsbury Square was north of here, straight up a main road. He could probably be there in 15 minutes. Underwood and Flinch, Season 4, Underground. Written and performed for podcast by Mike Bennett. This podcast is intended for an adult audience. Episode 12. His memory served him well. After a short and direct walk, he was on Bloomsbury Square and counting down the door numbers to his destination. He remembered the house well and was looking out for the front door with its glossy black paint and polished brass door knocker and letterbox. But on seeing it ahead, he stopped. Light shone through the fanlight over the door. Someone was home. That should have pleased him, but he felt strangely unnerved by it. How would Underwood react to seeing him like this, as a vampire? It was a question he'd been mulling over as he walked here, with numerous scenarios playing out in his mind. At one end of the spectrum of imagined possibilities, he saw Underwood embracing him as a brother, while at the other end, there was always the chance that Underwood might kill him. If that was how it had to be, then so be it. It would save him the trouble of falling on a stake. Damo walked down to the house and paused at the foot of the four stone steps for a long, steadying breath, then went up to the front door and knocked. He expected that it would most likely be David Flinch who opened the door, or maybe a butler, some Jeevesian type in a black tuxedo or whatever it was they wore, but no one came. He noticed there was also a doorbell, so he pressed it. He heard it ring deep inside the building. He stood back and waited, but again no one came. "Ah, for fuck's sake," he muttered, then began stabbing repeatedly at the doorbell until, between rings, he distantly heard a woman shouting something incomprehensible within. Then footsteps came thumping down the hall, and the door flew open. It wasn't Underwood, or Flinch, or Jeeves. It was a woman, and she looked pissed off. "What?" she demanded. Damo was taken aback, Why was an East European woman living in Underwood's house? Despite his surprise and her evident annoyance, his eyes took a moment to appreciate her beauty. Her black hair, long and lustrous, tumbled over her shoulders. She wore figure-hugging blue jeans and a bright red sweater that matched her lipstick. Damo gave her his best, disarming smile.
How are you? Is Lord Underwood at home by any chance?
What?
Underwood. Tall fella. Posh. I was told he lives here.
She scowled in bafflement before firing off a volley of unintelligible words at him. Damo shook his head and spoke over her.
Yeah, I'm sorry, love. I don't speak Russian or whatever it is you're talking.
Then he added, slowly,
speak English? Not English, she snapped. You go.
She began to close the door. Damo put out a hand and stopped it. The woman pushed, but he held it firm. She pulled it back open and was about to let fly a stream of foreign abuse, but then she met his eyes. In a moment, the tension left her body, her anger dissipated, and her expression softened. Damo smiled.
Jesus, he said to himself, if only I could have done this all my life. Imagine the peace and quiet I'd have had.
Then, in a pleasant voice, he said,
now then, let's you and me start over, yeah? Hello, you live here?
Yes, said the woman dully. I live.
You know Underwood?
No, Underwood.
Damo frowned, unsure whether she meant she knew him or he wasn't there. He said,
I mean, do you know Underwood? This is his house, yeah?
The woman's expression became troubled. She began speaking to him in her native language. Damo held up a hand to quell her.
No, English. Speak English.
No, speak English.
Oh, Janie. Okay, he sighed. What about Flinch? You know Flinch?
No, speak French.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Damo felt his patience slipping away. He was about to push past her to look for Underwood himself, when a child's voice called from inside.
Mama?
Damo looked past her to see a little boy standing in the hall. He looked about 4 years old. The kid put his thumb in his mouth and started down towards his mother. Damo rolled his eyes.
Ah, that's all I fucking need.
He gently laid his hands on the woman's shoulders and eased her to one side. Then he stepped past her into the hall and closed the door behind him. The kid was tugging at his mother's sweater, thumb in mouth, eyes worried.
Hey,
said Damo, smiling down at him.
How's it going, dude?
The kid looked up at him for a moment before retreating behind his mother's legs.
Look, don't worry, said Damo. I'm a friend, yeah? Me and Mammy.
He took the woman's hand and held it up with a smile.
We're friends, see?
Then he hunkered down and said to the boy,
hey, do you speak English?
In Spain, the kids of expats often spoke Spanish fluently, while their parents could barely say hola. Maybe this little guy had picked up a few words at kindergarten.
I just want to ask you, do you know a friend of Mammy's called Lord Underwood?
The kid said nothing.
Maybe Uncle Underwood?
The kid stared at Damo with his big brown eyes, gave his thumb a suck, then looked up to his mother. Damo was about to take the thumb out of his mouth when an angry voice boomed down the hall.
What the fuck is this?
Damo turned. A man stood in a doorway leading under the stairs from where a light shone. Damo suddenly became aware of the smell of food. The man was tall, at least 6 foot. He had short cropped blonde hair and wore jeans and a tight t-shirt that revealed the kind of physique you usually saw on Russian shot putters. Maybe he was a Russian shot putter, Damo thought. Damo stood up.
All right, mate. How's it going?
The man ignored him and called to the woman.
Yelena!
The woman turned at the sound of her name, her expression slack and unresponsive. The man frowned, concerned. He spoke to her rapidly in their language. Yelena's dull expression seemed to waver, and a look of doubt crept into her features. She touched her brow. Damo watched, unsure of what was happening. She looked like she might be coming out of his fascination. Could they do that? Then she looked at him, and he knew they could. She recognized him, looking in confusion from where he stood to the closed front door and back. Then she started speaking rapidly in her language as she raised her hands. Damo tried to catch her eyes and attempt to subdue her again, but he saw she was drawing her fingers into claws, the long red painted nails aiming at his face.
"Hey," he said, "easy now."
Then she sprang at him. Damo fell back, staggering into the hallway and trying to shield his face from her talons.
"Shit!"
he cried. He caught the woman by the wrists and stopped her. He was surprised at how little effort it took to hold her back. She was fighting like a harpy, but he found he could restrain her easily. His instinct was to give her a good hard shove away from him, but he hesitated, afraid that he might put her through the wall. Then a huge forearm came from behind him and encircled his neck. Damo released the woman and grabbed at the man's arm. The woman immediately relaunched herself at him, her nails now connecting with his face. He tried to catch her wrists again, but he couldn't. The man's grip was tightening, cutting off the blood flow to his brain. Now the couple were shouting to each other in their language. As the kid started wailing, Damo heard the woman say, "Police!" He couldn't breathe. Darkness was blotting the edge of his vision. He was blacking out. He had to fight them. He had no choice. He flexed his neck muscles, and immediately the man's chokehold felt like nothing more than a friendly embrace. Damo took hold of the man's hand and uncoiled the arm from his neck. The woman paused in her attack, unsure how this was possible, but on realizing that it was, she screamed and sprang at him again. Damo stopped her with a hand to her breastbone and shoved her back. He'd only intended to cause her to stagger a few paces, possibly stumble and fall, but she flew off her feet and went crashing against the front door. The kid screamed and went running to her.
"Look!" Damo cried. "Calm the fuck down, will yous? I don't want to fight. I'm just looking for someone."
He turned to appeal to the man and was met by a fist smashing into his face. The blow spun him around and sent him face first into the wall. He clung to it for a moment, then his face darkened.
"Oh, fuck you, man."
He pushed himself back onto his feet, turned, dipped, and threw an unrestrained punch straight into the man's stomach. His fist connected with a tight wall of muscle, but the man jackknifed and crumpled to his knees. Damo was about to follow up with a punch to the face when he caught himself. He might kill the guy. Instead, he gave him a savage backhanded slap that sent him toppling to the floor, where he lay gasping like a fish out of water. That was when Yelena sounded the alarm. The sound exploded through the hall, hammering against his head in ear-splitting waves of sound that seemed to rip into his brain. Damo had never heard anything like it. He clamped his hands over his ears and looked round in shock, trying to find the source. He saw the box on the wall behind the front door, the agony seeming to be emanating from it in waves that matched the pulsing of its little red light. He staggered back against the wall, watching, paralyzed by pain, as Yelena ran with the screaming kid in her arms, past him to where the man lay. Damo pressed his hands tighter against his ears and stumbled towards the front door. He had to get out. He clawed the door open, his face contorted in agony as the sonic pulse hammered him at close range. Then he was out and stumbling down the steps to the street. He started to run, reeling from the effects of the alarm that still blasted its terrible noise out into the street. People were looking at him, curtains were parting, pedestrians stepping aside, some reaching for mobile phones. He pulled up his hood and tugged it down over his face. His sleeve touched his face and came away bloody.
"Jesus," he thought, "she really scratched me up."
He ducked his head and broke into a full sprint. As he approached the corner, he slowed down before turning onto Southampton Row, head bowed and shoulders hunched, to disappear into the crowd. What had just happened, he asked himself. Who were those people? And where was Underwood? Was he even there at all? He had read in the papers about Russian oligarchs buying up London's most affluent neighbourhoods. Apparently, they built down into the basement levels. He'd read about swimming pools and gyms being built underground, a bit like Rose's place, but obviously modern and much more luxurious. Was that what this was? Had Russians bought Underwood's house? The guy seemed to have come from downstairs. But if that was so, why was Underwood's stuff from Spain coming here? It didn't make sense. Unless... Jesus, what if Underwood hadn't made it out of La Fantasia after all? What if he was dead and his estate had fallen into the hands of someone else? Someone Russian. Someone like Sergei. On the flight over from Spain, he'd read a report on the shootout at La Fantasia in a Spanish newspaper. Police were treating it as a gang war incident between Russian and Serbian mobs, but no names had been mentioned. The protagonists were stated only as being Russian and Serbian mafia. So what if Sergei had survived? What if he'd killed Underwood and Flinch, and now, with Lydia, he was here? Lydia! Christ! Lydia was the other vampire in London! She had to be! And furthermore, she was an estate agent. She knew all about property law, and with David out of the way, she'd have no one to stop her taking over Underwood's estate and his sect. She would get it all! A hand stopped him. You all right, mate? Damo turned to see a man looking at him with concern. He remembered his bloody face. He touched his forehead and cheeks. The scratches were already healing over, but he'd done nothing about the blood.
Oh, yeah, he smiled. Thanks, it's nothing, just a little scrap is all. You should see the other guy.
He gave a little laugh, but the other man wasn't smiling. He was no one special, just a concerned passerby, but he'd had a good look at Damo's face, and if the police came sniffing around after that alarm incident at Underwood's, the last thing he needed was another witness, and especially one who'd seen in which direction he was travelling. He met the man's eyes and concentrated his attention, far more so than he had with the Russian woman earlier.
Look, forget about it, mate. You never saw me, understand?
The man nodded slowly. Damo noticed he was smoking a freshly lit cigarette.
Okay, now give me that fag and get moving.
The man extended the cigarette to him. Damo took it, and they parted, the man going on his way like nothing had happened. Damo wiped the blood from his face with his sleeve and went on with his head down. He had to get back to Rose and tell her what was going on. He hadn't been gone that long. Hopefully she would still be asleep. But how would she take this news? He realized he'd been rash coming out without her. He had thought he could manage alone, that by going out and getting some kind of result with Underwood, he would reassert his sense of independence, if only to himself. He was a grown man, for God's sake. The thought that he was somehow a child again, hanging on to Rose's proverbial apron strings and unable to manage without her, annoyed him. But whether it annoyed him or not, there was, unfortunately, a certain truth in it. He was a newborn vampire. He knew next to nothing about the kind of creature he had become. Take that Russian woman back there, how she'd woken up from his fascination of her. What was the deal there? Maybe it was something the Russian guy had said to her, or maybe because her kid was in danger. Or maybe, and now that he thought of it, this seemed the most likely, it was simply because he'd done a lousy job of fascinating her in the first place. He checked his watch. He'd only been gone for about 40 minutes. He was sure that Rose would still be out for the count. But if she wasn't, he pictured her waking up and finding him gone. He hadn't even left a note. Shit, he muttered. What would she do? How would she feel? He hadn't even thought about that. Would she be angry? Hurt? Jesus, would she even let him back into the house? He stopped at a corner to wait for pedestrian lights. It was the wide and busy junction where Kingsway met High Holborn. On the other side of the street, he saw a florist's stall at the entrance to the underground station. Bingo! A nice bunch of flowers should smooth things over with Rose. When was the last time anyone had bought her flowers? Probably about 1940. The lights changed, and he hurried across the road to the florist's. He picked out the most beautiful bouquet on the stall, which cost him most of his remaining money, but they were gorgeous and smelled fantastic. Win-win, he thought. Not only would the flowers make Rose happy, but they'd brighten up that dismal apartment of hers no end. He walked on, feeling somewhat more optimistic. If she was still asleep, the flowers would be a beautiful thing to wake up to. She'd think he was the dog's bollocks. Shame he couldn't get her bagels or something. That would be the icing on the...
Damo!
Cake. He thought he heard someone call his name somewhere. But it couldn't be him they were calling to. He didn't even know anyone here.
Damo!
That shout again, louder this time. Damo glanced around. He couldn't see anyone.
Hey! Hey, Damo! Over here!
The voice was coming from the other side of the street. The traffic was four-lane and heavy. On his side, two lanes of buses, taxis, cyclists and cars were flowing south towards the river, while on the other side, the two northbound lanes had stopped in response to the lights at the corner. A line of double-decker buses blocked his view of the opposite pavement. Damo retraced his steps, his eyes searching across the street for a sign of whoever was calling him. Then a man appeared between the buses and waved a hand. A smile rose onto Damo's face. It was David Finch.
Jesus, Damo laughed. Thank fuck for that. I thought the Russians had got you.
David was jabbing a finger towards something up ahead. Damo looked and saw a pedestrian crossing. He looked back to confirm his understanding, but then he noticed a man behind David looking intently across the street at him. He was an older guy, mid-50s, wearing a shabby suit and coming out of a pub. Now he was saying something to David, but David was shaking his head, gesturing at the guy to stay put as he started down the road for the crossing. Damo didn't move, unable to take his eyes from the man across the street who continued to scrutinize him. Then, behind him, another man appeared in the pub doorway. This one was wearing a grey sports jacket over a black polo neck sweater, and he, too, was looking at Damo. However, when their eyes met, the man looked quickly away. Now he was talking, touching his ear, a Bluetooth device. The older guy wasn't responding, so it wasn't him the man was talking to. Damo looked for any sign of contact between the two of them, but there was none. The older guy seemed completely unaware of the man behind him. Then the man in the polo neck started off in the same direction as David. He was walking at a casual but determined pace, all the while his eyes on David and talking to his Bluetooth device. He was following him, no doubt about it. Did David know? Damo looked back to the older guy, who was lighting a cigarette and still watching him, and then, through the window of the pub, he saw two more men looking straight at him and talking. When he met their eyes, they looked away and stood up. Now they were moving to the door.
Jesus Christ, thought Damo, who are these guys?
The two new arrivals, both of whom were wearing dark suits, came out of the pub and split up without a word. One headed after David and the guy in the polo neck. The other, who had a shaved head, was walking back in the direction that Damo had just come. Damo saw that he too was talking into a Bluetooth device. At that moment, Damo knew with absolute certainty that these men were police. Maybe David was working with them, or maybe they were tailing him and he was unaware. But Damo couldn't afford to hang around to find out. He turned back sharply and started walking quickly but with an air of calm towards the underground station. From behind him somewhere, he could hear David calling to him, but he didn't turn back. As the buses parted up ahead, he saw the shaven-headed cop standing at the pedestrian crossing opposite the underground station, waiting to come across to Damo's side of the street. Their eyes met, and there was a moment of mutual understanding. The man's cover was blown. Now they would move to intercept. Damo ran, dropping the bouquet of flowers before charging into the underground. And so, Damo and David are reunited once again. Or at least they would have been if it weren't for all these strange men buzzing around. Is Damo right? Are they police? And does David know about them? Well, we'll find out at least some of what is going on next time, when we'll see things from David's side of the street. So join me next time for episode 13 of season 4. The music you're listening to is Ahmad Armour by Farid Farjad on Taranay Records. You can buy the track online from iTunes or Amazon, and you can stream it from Spotify, which is lovely if you like that sort of thing, and it seems these days most people do. So there you go. Well, there it was, listeners. Season 4, Episode 8. And I can't tell you how much I've been looking forward to sharing that with you. Isn't it nice to see the lads getting back together again? Sort of. It's great to have two strands of our story and the original Underwood and Flinch story coming together. Obviously, I can't say anything about what's going to come, but I think you'll like it. But enough of that. I can feel myself on the verge of letting plot details slip, so I'll shut up and move on. The scene in there with the alarm, when Damo was at the house and the alarm went off, that was actually inspired by an incident that happened to me a few years ago. We were renting a flat the last time we moved back to England, and one day I was at home, and I thought, you know, as you do, that I should check the batteries on the smoke detector. So I found the smoke detector, and I got on a chair underneath it and went up for a close inspection. It was of an unusual design, at least to me, and I couldn't see a place to open it, so I got a hold of it. And the next thing I knew, I was in the middle of a sonic attack. I was blasted by the thing, just as Damo was in the episode. I couldn't turn it off, I couldn't pull it off the ceiling and jump up and down on it until it stopped, and even if I had been able to, it wouldn't have done any good, because that was only part of an alarm system, which was, you know, sending out a message to the security firm that installed it and the fire brigade, because it was a kind of, a combined smoke detector and intruder alarm. I googled it, you know, just for the sort of sake of this chat, so I could say what it was, and I believe, going from the description of what happened that I put into the internet, it's called an Inferno sound barrier. The spectrum of sound that these things broadcast completely disrupts the brain and overwhelms the whole head process of any intruder to the point that they just have to leave. They can't ignore it and, you know, carry on burgling. It's absolute agony. I can't remember exactly what happened in the time after I triggered the alarm, but I know that I had to wait outside the flat apologising to neighbours and to the fire brigade until the security people came and shut the alarm down. It was hell, really. It really was. Like someone put my brain in a biscuit tin with a screaming baby and threw it down 10 miles of concrete steps. And so, yeah, as you can imagine, not very nice. And that was what inspired that particular scene in the book. But anyway, enough of that. Time for me to go. Thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. And I will leave you now with a promo for one of my podcast novelist contemporaries from way back in the day, Mr. John Miro. If you're a fan of science fiction stories in podcast form, you can't go wrong with John. But for me for now, ladies and gentlemen, until the moon rises again over Underwood and Flinch, have a good week and farewell.
The flames, the past's greatest secret, the key to a future where fleets voyage lifetimes to bring flames to new worlds, bringing distant stars only a few brave steps away. The key to the flames is the ferryman who emerge as young and strong as when first the flames kissed them. May the ferryman take you, lest you be lost forever. Walk the Fire, a shared world created by John Miro, burning bright with many other authors and narrators. Learn more at servingworlds.com.